And welcome to another episode of This Week in MMA with Fight Night Picks. I'm your host, Craig Allen. With me, as always, Matt Allen. And today, we have a very special episode. We've got an interview with two of Canada's finest prospects, and Adrian Vileka, 6-2, and Anthony Romero, 4-0, coming at us from Parabellum MMA in Ontario. We're going to have a conversation with them. They've got fights coming up at King of the Cage Combat Zone, February 23rd. In Niagara Falls, New York, on the United States side. We're also going to be doing a UFC on ESPN Plus preview coming at you from Brooklyn, New York on Saturday night. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Brought to you by Spretzbox. Head on over to the website spretzbox.com. All you have to do, click to get started. You can either order one of their boxes that has over $100 in value, or maybe you're interested in a single item like these great socks. So click on them, add them to your cart, head on over to the checkout, and then all you have to do is enter in the promo code FNP as follows here. You'll save 10% off your first box or your complete first order. That's spretzbox.com. And welcome back to Fight Night Picks. We're in the reverse order here, the wrong seats. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Craig Allen FNP. You can find Matt on Twitter at Matt Allen FNP. And today, like I said in the intro, it's a special episode. We've got a conversation with Adrian Vileka and Anthony Romero coming at us from Ontario. They have big fights coming up. King of the Cage Combat Zone in New York. The Niagara Falls of New York, not of Canada. And big fights for them. Again, a special thanks to Matt Dodge for setting up the interview. And as well, we're going to be speaking UFC on ESPN Plus number one. So the card, you've got TJ Dillashaw, Henry Cejudo for the flyweight belt at the top. People still kind of uncertain on what's going to happen with the flyweight division. Now, one of the questions that I ask before every card, and I'll leave it just for just a second, but what would you give a letter grade for the card? I will say, though, I've had this question come up on Twitter, on Instagram, a lot of Canadian fans, and of course, we're here in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. Where can we find the card? And this is going to be one where it's not like the typical card, and I'll switch over to another view here. So I've got the Canadian view of the card there on my right-hand side of the screen. So if you're in Canada, you can find the prelims, and there's no Fight Pass prelims. The prelims are going to be on TSN. The main card is also on TSN. But Matt, can you kind of explain what's going to happen in the States with this ESPN Plus card?
So it's kind of mixed up on the States. How they're going to do it is it's going to start with ESPN Plus, and then they're going to go over to ESPN. So the first four fights are going to be on ESPN Plus, kind of similar to how they used to be on like Fight Pass prelims. So they're going to start on ESPN Plus, and then after they're going to transition over to big ESPN. So that's where like the Cowboy Cerrone and Alexander Hernandez fight's going to be. And then after those three fights are done, so it's going to be the Cerrone-Hernandez fight, it's going to be the Joan Calderwood fight, but then after that, it's going to go over to the main card again. That's going to be on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, so I mean, you're going to have Menafield and Castro. You're going to have Calderwood taking on Lipsky. You're also going to have Donald Cerrone taking on Alexander Hernandez, a guy who's looked like a super prospect in the Dariush win. Maybe not as good against OAM, but still was able to get the win in OAM's home country, our home country as well. So really looking forward to this card. I'm going to switch back over to the other view. It's going to be a great card. If you had to give it a letter grade, like I said from the outset, and we talked about this on Saturday's episode, if you want to head back and listen to that, we kind of previewed the card just kind of roughly, but if you were to give this card a letter grade, what would you give it and why? I know you were talking kind of like a B on the weekend.
Yeah, I'd put it around a B because, again, it's not a lot of big names. It's more exciting fight potential. So a lot of the fights definitely, like, they don't have numbers next to their names. Or they might not even be names that you recognize, to be completely honest, but they're probably going to deliver as exciting fights no matter what.
I think they're going to be good fights. I think the only thing is with some of the cards that we were, and I guess the word would be spoiled with, this past fall into the winter, they were cards with recognizable names on fight nights, numbers next to their names, people that, you know, you or I or really, really hardcore fans that are going to be paying attention would think that could be a performance of the night, that could be a fight of the night, this person could be a star at some point. We saw that. On this card, I just don't think there's that name value. There's performance of the night, fight of the nights that we can kind of pick out through here, but at the same time, I don't think you're going to see somebody rise to the occasion. And I'm going to give it a C, maybe C plus. We do have a title fight. I get that. And it's a great fight, don't get me wrong. But other than that, not a really strong card, especially for an ESPN start.
I agree with that. I just think that the Cowboy Hernandez fight has a lot of other narratives going into it, yep. Especially that being kind of the main event on big ESPN. I think that could really have big implications later on in both guys' career. Cowboy's a little bit older now, but he's definitely a recognizable name. Casual fans know who he is. And if he wins that, a lot of people talk about the Conor fight afterwards. And then for Hernandez, I mean, he's had a rocket strapped to him this whole time. He beat Dariush in like 30 seconds. It was under a minute. He knocked him out. Yeah. He beat OAM. And there's really a lot of hype around him as a big prospect at 155. So I feel like that fight, it's... I don't want to say it's the most hype around it, but other than the title fight, that's definitely the biggest fight on this card.
And it's going to be a great fight. I'm glad that it's on big ESPN, so a lot of people in the States, if you're kind of thinking about getting ESPN+, you don't really have to for that one, but it teases what's left on the card. So with that, we'll leave the UFC on ESPN+ talk. Let's get right into the interview with Adrian Vleka and Anthony Romero. Adrian 6-2, Anthony 4-0, guys competing at featherweight and lightweight. On a great card, King of the Cage Combat Zone, February 23rd from Niagara Falls, New York.
All right, well, we'll get right into it. Again, thanks, guys, so much for joining me. We've got a neat setup going on today. We've got all three of us on the screen there. And you both have fights coming up February 23rd on the U.S. side of Niagara Falls for King of the Cage Combat Zone. Adrian, I'll start with you. You're used to podcasting, eh?
Yeah. Do you want me to plug it?
Real quick? I would. I mean, if people might not be familiar, where can they find it? And could you touch on maybe what you guys cover on the show?
Yeah. We have a podcast called the Championship Lifestyle Podcast. So this is kind of a weekly thing for me. And it's kind of health, wellness, mindset. So I was sick 2.5 years ago with Graves' disease. It's an autoimmune condition. I couldn't train. I had a whole bunch of time on my hands. We have a bunch of contacts in like the athletics world and in the performance world. And so we kind of wanted something to showcase our friends and then also open it up. So we started doing a podcast. Every Wednesday, there's an episode usually with a guest about their life. And then every Friday, we do some sort of health or wellness tip. So thank you for the opportunity to plug it. It's everywhere. It's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, like everywhere you can get a podcast, Spotify, you can find it. So
do you do YouTube stuff as well?
Yeah, every Friday a video goes up on YouTube. I think we're going to start putting our longer form ones up on there as well. But like you would understand. Unless you're like Rogan or like Ferris, I think the market for hour and a half long interviews is pretty small. So we might need to do something with the format, chop it up or something. But it's fun to do. I really enjoy it. So I'm thrilled to be on the other side today.
That's good to hear. Anthony, is there a podcast in the works? What's going on, man?
Yeah. Maybe one day.
Okay, so nothing in the works.
Yeah. I'm just working on training right now and doing my own training business. I've got a few clients now to keep my schedule even more. So, yeah, just enjoying that and the athletic world, so something that
very best. And I mean, I got one for you, Anthony. I mean, we'll get kind of into the nuts and bolts of it. When does training camp start for this fight? Has it already started, or is it starting the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, for sure. It started already. For me, training camp is not like a specific time. Like I'm always training, whether the intensity is higher or lower. But I'm always in the gym. It's not like I'm always active.
Very best. And I mean,
nothing new.
Yeah. Kind of another one for you. And we mentioned it before we kind of came on air. You guys both training at Parabellum, and maybe one for you, Anthony, like I said, with a lot of fighters that you guys have at the gym in similar weight classes, does that really help you out a lot with the training?
It helps a lot. Me and Adrian have some really good rounds. We push each other. He gets the better of me. Sometimes I'll get the better of him. So it's really competitive. And it's a fun environment. Lots of smiles and hard work. That's definitely put in every day.
Yeah, very best. And we had also mentioned it too. I mean, quite a few of your teammates taking part in Fighting Alliance 7. I was there covering that one here in it was St. John, New Brunswick. Before getting into MMA, and I'll throw this one at you, Adrian, were you training in a specific discipline before you branched out into MMA?
No, I was not. I actually got beat up in a strength and conditioning locker room for being a douchebag. Sorry, I don't know if you can swear.
Oh, yeah.
And I got beat up, and I was walking home, and I had a black eye and a bloody nose. My face was all swollen, and my dad... the only time my dad has ever driven down this road in his entire life is the same day that I'm walking home with a black eye and a bloody nose, and it's raining. It's like a movie. It was embarrassing. And he stopped and picked me up. He's like, "What happened to your face?" And I said that I got beat up in a change room. And he's like, "You might want to learn how to fight if you're going to do that." And I was like, "You know, that's a good idea, Dad." And so I went and found a gym like the next week, and that's how it started. So I had no intentions of fighting at all. I just wanted to not get beat up in gyms. So, and then it kind of expanded from there. They convinced me to have a fight. I took one. I loved it. And now I'm here, I guess, 18 fights later.
So, Anthony, did you have kind of a similar movie situation? Did you get beat up in a locker room? Is that how you got into it?
No, not at all. I started with Taekwondo. It was mostly to prevent that before it even started. My parents always wanted me to have some sort of defense, some sort of martial arts just in case. Martial arts, decided with Taekwondo, which is the only one that was kind of in town. And then I kind of lost interest in it, as it was just only pretty much kicks and breaking boards. And I started to realize it wasn't something that could truly defend myself on the streets. So my local gym opened, then my jiu-jitsu, kickboxing, I started competing and all that. So I've been doing martial arts since I was like 5 years old. So it's a big part of my life.
Very best. And I mean, again, nuts and bolts of it. So Adrian, you're taking on a guy that a lot of people might recognize down in the States. I mean, Billy Quarantillo, King of the Cage, lightweight champ at one point. He was featured on season 22 of The Ultimate Fighter. What does it take to beat a guy with that type of experience that he has?
What does it take to beat a guy? I think his poise is the biggest thing. Like when you're like a guy like Billy in that situation, you've been on the Ultimate Fighter house. You've been a King of Cage champion. So you've had these experiences. And I think that for him, probably, he's even keel. Like he's not emotional. He doesn't go up and down. Like he's so comfortable being in those situations. So I think if you're going to go into it and be able to beat someone like that, you have to have that same mentality, that same mindset, just to remain calm and realize that it's just a fight. He's just another person. It's just another fight. If I win, that's fantastic. If I lose, it doesn't really matter. Like at the end of the day, like it's just two men in a cage, and that's it. And so I think that's important to keep in mind. I think when people get big fights and they get big opportunities, and undoubtedly this is the biggest opportunity I've had in my career yet, they think that they need to change something. Like, oh, I need to train harder than I've ever trained before. Well, I probably need to train as hard as I did before, and I need to do the exact same thing that made me successful and not overthink it and create this monster out of a man. And so I think that's the most important thing.
And I'll throw another question at you, and I think I already know the answer. And it can either go one of two ways, and legit, if I flip a coin, I can get either of the answers. So you're taking on a guy that there's a lot of tape out there. He's fought kind of a, if you want to say, a who's who in the past. And like you said, he was on The Ultimate Fighter. Do you do a lot of tape study? Is it something that you sit down with your coaches and you guys will watch fight tape? Is it something you do on your own? Or do you just game plan the same pretty much for every single fight?
they watch a lot. I watch a little bit, but not too much. I think so. A friend of mine who's an awesome dude, but Dan Davis, he competed in the North American Nationals in jiu-jitsu, and he was running train, and then he got subbed by a 10th planet guy in the weirdest position ever, and it was embarrassing, and it went viral, and there was like a million views of him going unconscious. And after that, he talked about it. He's like, I think you should watch just enough to know if your opponent has something specific. So I'll watch like two or three fights to see if they have a specific tendency or if they have one move, like a guillotine, for example. If they have 10 wins by guillotine, I'll watch and see how they set that up. But no, I won't spend too much time, because otherwise I think you start watching highlight tapes. And even if the guy's 0-13, in your head, you think he's a killer. You're like, how'd this guy never win? And then, yeah, all of a sudden it's an uphill battle. So my coaches will watch a lot, but I don't.
So, Anthony, you know, 4-0 so far as a pro, 2-0 last year. You're on, what, a 12-fight win streak going back to your amateur days. Same question to you. Is it something, I mean, I know you're taking on a guy who's 2-0 and Juan Roman. Is it something that you've watched a little bit of fight tape that you can find? You try and find, you know, some angles in your training, a specific way to train for him, or is it same game plan every time? I mean, you're sticking with it, like 12 wins in a row, right?
Yeah. So far, I've been blessed in all my fights, all in one piece. And yeah, like I study my kind of like, but I try to take all my time to watch all his fights, because at the end of the day, you're gonna open, when it comes show time, then you're gonna kind of choke, right? So I could only find like maybe two of his fights, which is the only two professional, but I know he has a lot of amateur fights as well. And a lot of people, they say, oh, this is a good fight for you and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, he's dangerous. Anyone you go in the cage with is a dangerous opponent, and you should take them very seriously, because all it takes is one punch, one kick, elbow, anything can happen in there. So I'm excited, and I'm ready to prepare for a dangerous opponent, and I'm not even underestimating him just a little.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of put it that way, because as far as fight tape's concerned on him, he had a really long layoff from about 2010 to 2017 from what I could find. But since he's come back, he's been able to win some fights too. You went 2-0 in 2018, like I mentioned. What do you have planned for 2019, especially with the win streak and moving forward? What's the plan?
Well, I have two fights with King of the Cage that I'm contracted to. So I'm hopefully going to finish that and at 6-0, and then the Contender Series comes up in, I believe, June. So I would like to get on that or straight to the big show. Other than that, I'm just looking to take one fight at a time and just win, right?
Very best. Sounds like a good plan. And Adrian, I mean, you're taking on a guy with a lot of experience. This could be a stepping stone into possibly another organization or a contender shot, too. I mean, what's your plan for the coming year?
Yeah, that'd be ideal. I would love to. I think I'll probably go up to 155 and fight 6-0 Anthony Romero. That'd probably be my plan for later in 2019. No, I think, I would like to. King of the Cage is a great organization, so I have no problem fighting for them. But if not, I'd love to be on like a CFFC or somewhere with a lot of Fight Pass access, something like that. I think I deserve to be there already. Well, I shouldn't say that. You get what you earn. I haven't obviously earned it yet, but I think that I can compete with the very best in the world already at this point. I think that if I walked into the UFC or into Bellator tomorrow and had a fight, it would just be another cage fight, and I think I'm on that level. So 2019, I guess, is just about proving that, validating that, and then and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, and we've even seen in recent memory back with UFC 231, you had Kyle Nelson from Ontario just get a shot, and now he's in the big show just like that, a guy who had competed in Elite One MMA here in New Brunswick at one point. So it's great to see, and good luck to both you guys with the fights coming up in 2019 as well. For the fans at home, so they know where to find the podcast, it's all over the place, but where can they find you guys online? And if you got any sponsors or family, friends to shout out, let us know. I'll start with you first, Anthony.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I had to write everything down and everything to remember. But first and foremost, my parents, my mom and dad, they're the ones who helped me through this whole thing. And then my sponsors, Never Tap Canada, Cracker Jack Stadium, Joe Sirianni, real estate agent. I have a lot of sponsors that I mentioned, Blue Star as well. They're the ones who helped me out the most, and I really appreciate that, everything they're doing. My team, Parabellum, and my coaches, Rory, Lyndon, and yeah.
Very best. So, Adrian, where can we find you online? Who do you have to shout out?
You can go to Avalaka145 on the Instagram or Championship Lifestyle, either one. I alternate between the two of them. And I don't know. I think thank you to Matt, who's our manager, Dodge Sports, who manages both Anthony and I, for getting us this opportunity to chat with you. Thank you for having us on. In terms of sponsorship, I don't know. We're ironing it out right now. If you're in Toronto and need a haircut, go to Crow's Nest Barbershop, one of the best in the business. But yeah, that's it.
Very best, guys. Well, like I said, good luck in 2019 with the fights coming up. King of the Cage, February 23rd. Really looking forward to it. Thanks again.
No problem at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So a great conversation with Adrian and Anthony. Make sure you check them out on Twitter and Instagram as well. And Adrian's got a podcast, so you can find that
all over the place. You can also find some snippets on YouTube as well. Glad that they could join us. Again, a special thanks to Matt Dodge for setting up the interview. Make sure you find him on Instagram. It's Dodge_sports. And you might have noticed in the bottom right-hand corner of this view, I mean, we've got the nice ticker going on the bottom. You can see all the fights. You can also see the card up there as well. We're going to be going along with sportsbooth.tv on Saturday night. So we're going to be doing a live event companion. We're going to be talking about this card. And the thing with Sports Booth is it's kind of neat. So if you're paying attention here, we run an OBS software. We go into YouTube. There's about, what, maybe a 10-second delay?
Yeah, it's noticeable for sure.
Yeah, exactly. But it's what all the, you know, I'd say big people that do fight companions, there's not a whole lot of players in the space, but if you see a Joe Rogan, if you see somebody like that, it's the same thing with them, and the expectation is, you know, maybe pause the TV, try and sync up with us, or if you're going to watch after the fact, you can do it that way as well. But what Sports Booth allows us to do is broadcast in real time with the broadcast. They claim it's going to be a split second delay, so if you follow along on sportsbooth.tv, and I'll drop a link at some point, you're going to be able to find us on there. There's a chat. You can find the full fight card. There's a lot of neat features on there. And they've also done a partnership at one point with Joey Diaz as well. So a reputable name like that, if they've used it, I definitely trust it. And I'm really looking forward to it. So it should be a great time on there. That's what we're going to be doing on Saturday night. And really looking forward to this card. I mean, I know I did just give it a C or a C+, and you gave it, you know, C+, a B, something like that. And it kind of sucks because we lost some fights. We lost some fighters on the card. I know John Lineker is one of those guys that really like to see fight. Also, Rude Boy, Randy Brown, and Ian Kutalaba, a guy who has done some shady, shady things with regards to possible performance enhancement. And he did serve a suspension there, but he's a fun fighter to watch for sure, and it's a shame that we couldn't see him taking on Glover Teixeira.
Especially, and two of those three guys are super exciting fighters who, like, they might not sell a lot of subscriptions, but if you see those guys, like, especially if you put a guy like Lineker on big ESPN and they see him fight, that might kind of convince a few people to go the extra mile, and maybe not subscribe to ESPN Plus right away, but they're definitely going to at least get the free trial.
Exactly. So I'm going to move back over to the ticker. A reminder that, again, those Fight Pass prelims in the States, so they're going to be ESPN Plus prelims. They're going to start at 6 p.m. Eastern. If you're in Canada, like the view that we have there, you can find them on TSN. And the first fight of the night, you've got a couple of welterweights. Chance Rencounter, and I said this on the Toctagon with Ty O'Keefe, you'd think it'd be Ron Kunstra if you were Canadian or if you were French, but it's Rencounter, who's 12-3. He's taken on kind of a short notice call up in Kyle Stewart.
I've never heard of the man.
I was gonna say Kyle Stewart. To be rude, Kyle Stewart's a big name in LFA. He's had plenty of fights under his belt. You look at him, he had a win on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series from last year, 3-1 in 2018. He won a belt. I believe it was Iron Boy MMA that he won the belt. It was more or less a one-off fight that was
not a major promotion.
It was a one-off from LFA. 7 of 11 wins by finish, and if we're looking at the odds, and that's typically what we do, Stewart's sitting around a minus 160 favorite to Rencounter's plus 130. Can you tell us a bit about Rencounter's UFC debut that he had this past year?
Yeah, so he came in on short notice to fight Bilal Muhammad, and Bilal Muhammad, who you'll see later on in the card, or I guess...
The next fight.
Really world-class guy. He's not in the top 15, but he's kind of one of those fringe guys, like top 25 to top 15, and talent stack division is what I meant to say. Like welterweight, even to be in the top 25, you're doing something right with your career. But Bilal was just too much for him. He ended up winning by decision. Bilal's not really a big finisher, but he dominated every aspect of the fight. So you didn't really get to see a whole lot from Chance in that, but you're really going to kind of see more about him in this fight. It's going to be a little bit more... He's going to be able to showcase his skills a little bit more.
And Bilal Muhammad, a cornerman of Luis Taylor, who was the first millionaire PFL's year-end bash. So that was pretty cool. And we're talking Chance Rencounter, a guy who, you know, 8 of 12 wins by finish. He's got 6 knockouts. That loss in his UFC debut was against a Bilal Muhammad who, Man, give credit where credit's due. He took that fight during Ramadan. He's a practicing Muslim. That's got to be tough to try and cut weight.
He's done it before, though. He fought Jordan Mead.
It's nuts.
No, and it's insane, but at least he's kind of used to it now. He's done it a few times, so it's not like this completely new thing for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, to not be able to eat during the day but still somehow train for a professional MMA fight is ridiculous what he's able to do.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give credit where it's due.
And to be at the level he's at, too. It'd be different if this was just some guy in the regional scene. Like, this is a guy in the UFC doing it at the highest level. He only has two losses in the UFC, and it's Vicente Luque, who's one of those underrated guys in the UFC, and Alan Jobin, who most people know how good
he is. And that was a fight of the night, too. And let's just roll into that. Now, before we do, making our picks on this fight, Stewart, short notice call-up. Ren Counter, a guy who trains at Alliance. Stewart coming from LFA. Ren Counter had the one experience in the UFC. Ren Counter is going to have that, you can't really say strength of schedule, but strength of gym.
Yeah.
I mean, guys like Ed Ruth, guys like Dominic Cruz, if you go down into the lower weight classes from 170, there's going to be great ones there. But at the same time, if you move up, I mean, even at 205, they've got Phil Davis. They've got guys like Patrick Cummins. AJ Matthews is in that kind of category.
World-class gym with a lot of really talented fighters.
Very best. So if we're making picks in that fight, I'm going to take Stewart on short notice. I'm going to pick with the odds and go Stewart in that one.
I'll pick Ren Counter. I'll give you guys an underdog pick just because... And for some guys, it doesn't matter, but octagon jitters really are a thing. And for Ren Counter, he went a full 15 minutes with a world-class guy. So at least he kind of knows where he stands in the UFC, what he needs to get better at. We haven't seen him for a little while. So I think that I'll get the win by decision.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a decision either way. Yeah. I don't think you're going to see fireworks in this
fight. It's not going to be fight of the night.
It's not going to be fight of the night. But I have it written down as a possible performance of the night. You know, Bilal Muhammad, remember the name, 14-2, taking on Jeff Hands of Steel, Neil, 10-2. I think if Jeff Neal's able to string together a few more big performances, and we said from the outset, 3-0 in the UFC, all three of them finishes. I believe he hasn't seen a third round.
No, he hasn't.
And his only loss recently was in 2017 to Kevin Holland, a guy who we saw just take a ton of punches from Thiago Santos.
Got a wicked chin
and,
on him.
Yeah, didn't get finished. And for Jeff Neal, he's finished 8 of 10 fights. He's looked great so far, and I'm really looking forward to this fight. You look at Bilal Muhammad, a guy who, like you said, a world-class guy. He's training with great guys, too.
Oh, yeah.
Former Titan FC champ. That definitely holds some water. And he did have that fight of the night against Alan Jobin. I can't see it for Muhammad in this fight. And Neal's sitting at like a minus 170. I think that's a pretty good spot if you can pick Jeff Neal
there. Bilal Muhammad's definitely, he's a grinder for sure. He's not going to go out there and starch Jeff Neal with one punch. But if Muhammad's going to win, he's definitely going to have a wrestling heavy game plan, I would imagine. Because if you have to look at both of them, stand-up-wise, Jeff Neal, he's far more technical. Which is weird because Bilal Muhammad comes from a camp that is pretty much strictly strikers. But he's kind of the odd one out in them. But I think it will be a good fight. I think if Neil's going to win, he's going to have to stop it within the first two rounds. Because I think it's not that Neil has bad cardio. It's just we know more about Bilal Muhammad's cardio.
And exactly. And we haven't seen Neil in a third round in the UFC. Who are you picking in that fight?
I pick Jeff Neal by stoppage, I would say. And then that would kind of set him up for a fight. He won't be in the top 15 after this. But if he wins this fight by stoppage, and if he wins another one, he'll be in that top 15.
Yeah, I mean, another name that you brought up too, Nico Price. Maybe that's a good fight.
Great fight.
It makes a bit of sense there. So our next fight coming up, you and I talked off air. You were kind of surprised that T. Edwards is coming back from the fight that he had. Why?
Well, because T. Edwards' last fight, if you guys didn't watch, he got double head kicked in Moncton. And it was October 27th, 8th?
Yeah.
26th. Anyways, it was right near the end of October. So let's just look. He got all of November, all of December, midway through January. So that's 2.5 months to recover from a clean knockout. Like, he got head kicked with the left foot, I think, stumbled to his right, got head kicked with the right foot,
yeah,
and then dropped him 8 more punches. And maybe he didn't go completely out, but it doesn't matter what age you are, it doesn't matter how bad you got hurt. If you got even dropped that soon ago, your chin's not going to be where it should be, and it's not an ideal position to be in, even though he's the favorite in this fight.
I mean, he looked great coming into the UFC. He was a heavy favorite in that fight against Don Madge. So if you were into the gambling world and you looked at Don Madge, I don't know if I made an... I'm sure I made an official pick. Okay. I was busy with the week spending it there in Moncton. But Madge had, you know, a head of steam coming in from EFC, and he fought top competition there. So it was kind of tough, whereas Edwards had a lot of finishes on his record. But he's taken on Dennis Bermudez, a guy that's 0-4 in his last four.
Yeah.
His last three are all losses by split decision.
And all of those, you could argue that he won.
Yeah, and all to fairly top competition as well. Darren Elkins, I believe, was the first split.
It went Darren Elkins.
Feely. Yeah, and then he lost his last fight, like I said.
Rick Glenn.
And then he's 2-6 going all the way back to 2014. So it's something that you might worry about. I wrote this in the show notes, and not debate it, but we can kind of put this to rest. Dennis Bermudez has a win over Max Holloway from 2013, and it means zero. Don't put that in your back pocket. Don't think that's great information to have. That means nothing. No. If you want to sit here and argue with us about Conor McGregor and Dennis Bermudez and Max Holloway, it's all ridiculous. It's poppycock.
If they fought today, Max Holloway would be a 2,000 favorite.
And I won't allow it. And that's what I mean. It was back in 2013. I mean, we're talking now. We're going up on 6 years on 2013, so you can't put a lot of stock into it. But in this fight, T. Edwards, a -125 favorite. Dennis Bermudez, a +105, +110. Who are you taking in this fight?
I'm taking Dennis Bermudez. I thought that in his losing streak, okay, so we get knocked out by the Korean Zombie, not the end of the world. Korean Zombie is amazing. But then he lost to Darren Elkins. Now, I thought that fight was close. I thought Elkins won that fight. But I did think Dennis Bermudez beat Andre Feely fairly clearly. I didn't really think it was a split decision. I thought Bermudez won that fight. And then against Rick Glenn, I did think Rick Glenn won that. But again, they've all been really close fights, and even the split, even the losses he had, you could kind of look at it both ways. And I just think his experience, he's moving up in weight, he's going back up to lightweight, he's been at featherweight, so maybe he had some weight-cutting issues down at featherweight. I just think all in all, Dennis Bermudez will kind of use some of his experience and win by decision.
It's funny, I mean, Dennis Bermudez is a guy in my mind's eye that I liken to Joseph Benavidez, a guy that looks good on certain nights. Some of the fights are so close. You know, the fight that he had with Pettis was really, really close. It's just, it's always tough with those two guys, and I kind of liken them. And in this fight, it's tough. It's really tough. I mean, T. Edwards coming off that brutal, brutal loss to Don Madge. I don't think Dennis Bermudez is going to give him that kind of fight or that kind of fit. I don't think you have to worry about getting finished by Dennis Bermudez at this point.
He's got good overhand, right?
Definitely, for sure. I'm going to be taking Edwards in this fight. I think he's going to right the ship, but I could definitely be wrong. I mean, he is the favorite in this one. Moving forward, what fight do we have?
We've got Mario Batista's fighting Corey Sandhagen. Sandhagen, you guys might remember, he fought Yuri Alcantara. He had a really big comeback. He got dropped near the cage, got rocked. Kind of jumped, did a whizzer into an armbar, which is crazy stuff. But then Alcantara, he tired himself out going for all these moves, trying to finish the fight early. And Sandhagen beat the brakes off him for 99% of the first round, other than the part that he was in trouble for. He ended up, they probably should have stopped it in between rounds, kind of looking
back.
And then in the second round, he just kind of picked up where he left off. There was so much damage that he had accumulated.
It's really a shame that we didn't get John Lineker in this fight. It's definitely a shame because nobody wants to fight John Lineker. Nobody in the bantamweight division wants to fight him whatsoever. We were talking off air too. Corey Sandhagen, a guy that's 5'11 and 135.
Big guy for...
Tall guy for 135 for sure. And for Bautista coming into this fight, it was something that I had mentioned on the weekend. He was 4-0 as an amateur and then took a big break before he became a pro. 6-0 as a pro. Again, that could be another one of those learning tools. Maybe a coach saw a potential flaw in his game, didn't want an opponent to exploit it before going pro. Maybe you want to work on your hands, just like Will Morris had mentioned on the show a couple months ago at this point now. So for Sandhagen, huge favorite in this fight, -500. Bautista coming in, 5 of 6 wins by finish, 3-0 in 2018. Who are you taking in this one?
You've got to go with Sandhagen. He's the massive favorite for a reason. He'll probably win by stoppage, I would imagine. Somewhere in the second round, I'd say.
You have to look at it, too. I mean, UFC experience definitely plays a factor. I think of a guy that recently came up and kind of had a similar trajectory as Bautista, and there's a whole lot of them. But Jonathan Martinez, when he came to Moncton, that's a guy that it was short notice. He was in LFA. He had a good record. He was taking on Andre Sukumtoth, a guy who had a bad, bad fight before that. And Jonathan did not look that great. And it's funny because they already have a fight book for him in the UFC. So moving on from that, we're talking about this card where in Canada we can watch the entire thing on TSN. In the States, this is your first fight on big ESPN. And you've got Alonzo Menafield taking on Vinicius Castro. Mojea, if you find it on certain different sites every now and again, you might have a Brazilian fighter. It's a last name. It's a nickname.
Yeah, it's kind of odd how that
this is. Could be a fight of the night type fight.
It definitely could be. I'm not crazy familiar with either guys, but from everything that I know about them, it's definitely going to be an exciting fight. It's the only light heavyweight fight on the card, I believe. Nope, second, I guess. Glover, I forgot. I keep on forgetting Glover.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
It's kind of shown how far he's fallen recently. But yeah, it's really going to be a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, Menafield 7-0, Castro 9-1. We did a deep dive into their records. And you look at a guy like Castro, who's had 10 fights in just about 3 years, 5-0 in 2018, got a win on Dana White's Susan 8 Contender Series, Brazil, and now in the UFC.
It's like cowboy-level activity.
8 wins by submission. I mean, that's nuts alone.
Unheard of.
1 knockout win, and he did get knocked out, and this is part of your analysis, but he got knocked out in Shooto in 2017, so maybe keep that in the back of your mind. Menafield, 6 wins by knockout. He beat 3-0 Deshaun Boatwright on Dana White's Susan 8 Contender Series. That's how he got into the UFC. Menafield's a big favorite. Who are you going to take in this
one? I would take Menafield in this. I just think he's the favorite for a reason. He's looked a little bit more impressive. Well, why? Who do you take? Do you go with the underdog?
Or? Yeah, I'm going to take Castro or Mojea. I think that submission ability is really going to play a factor. It's just going to depend on whether or not he can get the takedown, or maybe he's going to be the type of guy that, let's say Menafield throws a combo, throws an overhand, and then Castro maybe tries to pull guard. It could be one of those sneaky fights. It could be one of those boring fights. That's We've true. Seen a lot of fighters recently try and pull guard, and it never seems
Unless
to
Unless
really
you're
work.
Like Charles Oliveira, let's stop doing that.
Exactly. It doesn't tend to work out all that great. Your next fight. So
this is the fight of the night.
We got the Violence Queen, Ariane Lipsky, coming over from KSW, a promotion that we've had our biggest success on Fight Night Picks with KSW
the
content.
The Polish love us.
Ariane Lipsky, that's now, hold on, be modest, 11-3. She's taking on Joanne Jojo Calderwood, 12-3 at flyweight. And Calderwood looked great in her last fight.
She really did. Calderwood was always great standing up, and everyone kind of knew that. But eventually, girls just realized, okay, let's just wrestle her. She comes from a country in Scotland that it's not like they have, you know, a cherished wrestling background.
For sure.
Most European fighters aren't really known for the wrestling. So most girls just figured, okay, I just got to take her down. Her guard's not great. She's not great at getting back up to her feet. That's where I'm going to have the most success. But in her last fight, she got taken down by, what's her name? Faria?
Yeah.
Anyway, and she ended up getting an armbar off her back, and it was actually really nice. So it showed that she's made improvements in the areas that I really think she has to. And she even has a spitting backfist knockout win over the last woman to fight for the Bellator or strawweight champion in Valerie Letourneau.
Yeah, flyweight belt there too.
Yeah, flyweight. Sorry,
but still, I mean, Letourneau's fought a who's who of competition.
Exactly.
So it's definitely a big win on her record. I'm looking at Lipsky as somebody who has decent footwork, decent striking ability, finishing ability on
she's
the ground
everywhere.
With her submission. She's good, technically sound everywhere. 9-fight win streak as well. And she's fought good talent in KSW. It's not like some of these women's divisions, there's not good talent. There definitely is. 7 of 9 wins by finish. She defended her belt twice. I'm taking Lipsky in this fight. I know a lot of people might not. I understand that. And it's kind of funny because you see fighters go to TriStar. You see some leave. And we have seen a fair amount of them leave here recently, making moves, starting grooves before we knew they were gone. Just like how bizarre, great tune. But still, we've seen some fighters leave and find success.
Like I'm leaving after that reference.
And, Calderwood did. I mean, moving to Vegas really proved that it was a smart move for her. And moving up to flyweight looked great as well.
Well, yeah, and the big thing with Calderwood, she said that she was going, like, she lived in Scotland still, but she kept on making that move to TriStar, and then she'd kind of go back and forth. And she really wanted to just be in a place where everything was the same. So she ended up moving to Vegas. And, yeah, the improvements have really shown.
And it was neat. You can head back, and I just draw the parallel because Stevie Ray, a guy who is Scottish, who trains at TriStar, and he said after the fight, you can find it on Fight Night Picks, the interview, but he said, I might stick around TriStar. It's great to have that level of training partner, but at the same time, it sucks to fly across the Atlantic, not see your family as much. And, you know, this should be a great fight. It's a great women's flyweight fight.
It really is. And something just because I just thought of it is you're noticing more and more fighters don't like training in places where it snows.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to keep on moving south. Edson Barbosa brought that up, how he was always training in New Jersey. And they just thought, like, I'm Brazilian. I don't like the cold. I'm not used to it. I'm going to do it in Florida. Of course, the weather's very similar where it is Brazil. You see a lot of Brazilian fighters down at ATT. And look what it's done for him. I mean, mentally, physically, he looks like a different fighter. fighter. So maybe it is a big difference where these people going from colder climates to warmer ones. Maybe I'm looking
Misha Serkinov, another Canadian that made the move recently, and it worked out great for him. Went from extreme couture to extreme couture and found success. Yeah,
exactly. Maybe I'm looking into it too much, but I just thought of it. So you're kind of noticing this trend a little bit more in MMA.
Now, one trend, and you talk about a guy that leaving a gym, you got Donald Cerrone taking on Alexander Hernandez.
You picked Lipsky in that last fight. It's one of those kind of up in the air. If you're gambling, Calderwood wouldn't be a terrible underdog to pick, but I do think Lipsky will get the finish.
I would have a look at the prop bet to see a finish or what the over-under is. If it's 2.5 rounds, maybe pick the under on this one.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
I think you're going to have a finish in this one, but yeah, I'm going to take Lipsky in this fight. But moving forward, so I said somebody that switched up camps. You've got Donald Cerrone training out of the BMF ranch. You've got Alexander Hernandez, a guy who's came into this fight, like you said, with a rocket on his back, with a lot of confidence, a big win over Beneil Dariush. If you're able to get a win against a guy who's been in the UFC, who has the experience like Dariush, just like that, a win over a Canadian in Canada, you're definitely kind of building on a high here. So Hernandez is one of those guys, and it happened at the press conference today. Every single time Hernandez opened up his mouth, whether or not you liked it, agreed with it, it was cringe. Depending on how you see it, Dana White had a smile on his face every single time he opened up his mouth, which, if you're a company man, we've seen it. Kamaru Usman's getting a title shot because he's a company man. So if Alexander Hernandez can keep making smart moves, this could be great for him. And a win over Cowboy Cerrone would be huge.
It's really a win-win for the UFC, because if Cerrone wins, he's a star anyways. He just keeps on moving up the ranks, and he looks determined. I've noticed Brett Okamoto did a piece with Cowboy. It's like a 35-minute interview he did. It's on YouTube for ESPN's channel. I really encourage you to check it out. And it just seems like Cowboy, he's not the same. You want me to fight Jorge Masvidal in 2 weeks? I'll go do that. You want me to fight Darren Till in Poland? I'll do that. He's a little bit more reserved with, like, I'm not just going to fight anyone now. I want this title shot. I want to beat Hernandez. Then I want to get a guy in the top five. I'll beat them. Then I want to fight Khabib.
Which is interesting, because he was going to be fighting Conor McGregor. Now he's fighting Alexander Hernandez. Yeah. I don't know if I totally agree. I know what you mean. And Brett Okamoto, one of the best in the business. And definitely check out the interview for sure. But in this fight, I mean, you've got Cerrone, who looked great against Mike Perry, was kind of wishy-washy before. I mean, a big win over Medeiros.
Lost to Leon Edwards after that.
Some tough losses. Leon Edwards was a big one. He's one of the biggest stars in the UFC. I mean, a lot of people, they're kind of on the fence about it. He's got the most fights in UFC history, the most wins, most finishes,
most bonuses. He's got every record you could have.
He's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer for sure. He's one of the most fun guys to pay attention to.
If you don't like Cowboy Cerrone, you shouldn't watch him.
And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people taking Donald Cerrone in this fight. I'm taking Donald Cerrone in this fight. Surprisingly, he's an underdog moving back.
It's really weird, and especially like we had talked about, kind of just experience. Cowboy's fought everyone, and it's not like he's been fighting just random guys lower in the rankings. He's always been in the top 10, so he's constantly fighting the best guys in the world.
Yeah, I mean, even a guy like Mike Perry is a tough opponent.
Exactly.
And a tough out, and Mike Perry made the dumbest move in that fight, trying to take him down, ended up getting submitted. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, the only problem with Cowboy is he's amazing on the ground. He's really good at wrestling. He's got phenomenal striking. Cowboy doesn't move his head, though, and it's so goddamn frustrating, because that's the reason he always struggles against people with big power. He stands very like Justin Gaethje, kind of, only moves his front foot like Muay Thai, but he doesn't eat a punch like Justin Gaethje. He can't just walk through
everything. And if Hernandez is able to back him up,
exactly,
he could get a win there. I could totally get that, but really, really looking forward to this fight. It's the last fight on big ESPN before you have to move back to ESPN Plus if you're in the States. The main card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Atlantic, where we are, and you can find it on TSN if you're here in Canada. So the first fight is an interesting one, because it's supposed to be Glover Teixeira taking on Ian Kutalaba. You've got Carl Roberson coming off a big win over Jack Marshman, UFC 230, and Glover Teixeira, who hasn't looked like Glover Teixeira in a while.
He's fallen on hard times lately. I mean, he was ranked, what, number 2?
Yeah.
He fought Rumble Johnson, got knocked out in 10 seconds against Rumble, which is insane. And then, who'd he fight out? He fought Jared Cannonier right after that. Looked good against Cannonier, who's a dangerous fighter, don't get me wrong. He's definitely not a good wrestler, though, and that's really what Glover used to his advantage. Now, Carl Roberson's a very similar fighter to Jared Cannonier. Yeah. I don't think he has the same power. He's a little bit more dynamic with his strikes, but if you look, they're both heavy stand-up. They both have good power and whatnot. But I would say Glover probably wins this fight. I know he's fallen on hard times, but if you look at everything Glover's good at versus everything Carl Roberson's good at, Glover's a phenomenal wrestler. He's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world champion. He has good stand-up, but he's very boxing heavy. He doesn't throw many kicks. So if Roberson can stay on the outside, really use his range and his footwork to get away from the takedowns of Glover, I think it should be, I don't want to say an easy fight for him, but it'll definitely make it easier on himself. But if Glover can close that distance, I think it would be a quick fight for Glover if he can close the distance.
It's not like Glover Teixeira is taking on a big wrestler like a Corey Anderson in this fight, so you're not going to have to worry about that. All Teixeira is going to have to worry about is a stand-up. And Carl Roberson, yeah, we got to see the power from him if it's there. If he's able to get a win like this, it's going to be awkward because you beat a big enough name at light heavyweight. Do you stay at light heavyweight? Exactly. I mean, the world is yours. We've seen it from Anthony Smith. We've seen it from Thiago Santos, who's now moving up. Does Roberson maybe punch his ticket and stick around?
I think the difference between the Thiago and Anthony Smiths of the world and the Carl Roberson is they were going to move up anyways. Carl just took this fight and then jumped in. His frame doesn't really fit the weight class all that well. He's kind of a tall, thin guy. Not thin like Neil Magny thin, but he's definitely not like a big, muscular guy. So I don't think he cuts... Like, I would say he'd walk around, like, 210.
Yeah.
So he's not going to have to cut a lot of weight to get here, which is a good sign, and I think a lot more fighters are starting to do that. But I don't think this is his natural weight class. I think, as we saw, as you mentioned, the Marshman fight, he looks really good at 185.
Yeah.
But again, the fight before that, he fought Diego Fajeia. And again, he's got that really good striking, but Diego Fajeia took him down like that and then just put him in arm triangle, beat him, so...
I mean, if we're going to make picks in this fight, it's tough. Money seems to be going on Teixeira a little bit more. The odds are kind of closing in around minus 125, something like that, with Roberson plus, you know, 100, 110. Listen, if you want to put money on Roberson, I wouldn't totally disagree with you. This is kind of one of those flip a coin type of fights, which is kind of a shame because it's closer to the top of the light heavyweight division. I'm going to take Glover Teixeira in this fight based on the experience. But you know what? If Carl Roberson was able to pull off a knockout, and if you can get a prop bet on that, I take it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the worst thing. And the thing that you kind of have to look at is when guys get on losing streaks, I find that people look at the and then fight some other person. People always think, oh, well, they lost a few fights. They're probably going to lose this next one. But the thing is like, would Carl Roberson beat Corey Anderson? Would he beat Gustafson? Would he beat the same guys that Glover's
lost? Yeah, exactly. I don't think so. So it's a tough one to try and pick. You're taking Teixeira, I'm assuming, in this one. I'm taking Teixeira. And if we move forward into the next fight, it's a highly marketable fight.
It is.
A fight that was announced quite a long time ago. It was kind of surprising because you had the domestic violence issues from Rachel Ostovich's husband at that time. And Paige VanZant, who hasn't had a lot of success recently in the UFC, I believe her last fight, was she on...
Jessica Rose Clark, and then she lost that fight. That was last year when Jeremy Stephens fought Duho Choi.
It's been a while since we've seen Paige VanZant in the cage. And she had a lot of injury issues. At the same time,
she broke her arm in that fight.
Yeah, and she's highly marketable outside of the UFC too. I mean, she speaks very well. She's got a book, if I'm not mistaken.
She does. She has a book. She's very pretty. She does everything right. She speaks well. Like, she's extremely marketable, like you said. And that's why I'm surprised not a big ESPN, to be honest. I've said this many times before. She's very good to put on a fight night to get people to watch, but she's not going to put on a pay-per-view because the Paige VanZant fans of the world aren't the ones who are going to pay that money to watch
that fight. Yeah, and that's totally fair. I mean, if you can watch and understand where I'm coming from here, if you can watch Dana White's Dancing with the Stars, if you can watch that on regular TV and you kind of got into the Paige VanZant narrative, oh, she's a fighter, oh, this is on ESPN, I already have TV.
Exactly.
Why not? But for me to spend, you know, $70 US to get a pay-per-view to watch Paige VanZant, I don't really think it's worth it. So I totally get where you're coming from. Definitely one of the most marketable fighters in the UFC for sure. Was she not a Monster sponsored athlete?
She was a like everyone in the UFC has to be sponsored to a certain degree by like Monster and Reebok, but she was one of the exclusive ones for both of it. Kind of like when Rory McDonald went to Bellator, for instance,
Donald Cerrone's a Monster sponsor as well.
Like they keep those sponsors outside of just the cage.
Yeah.
And yeah, she was exclusive with Monster. She was exclusive with Reebok, but it's kind of interesting to see how marketable she is. They've both since dropped their sponsorships with her. So I don't know if the UFC is almost preparing to kind of part ways. I don't want to like jump to that conclusion, but it does kind of look that way. If she loses this fight, it definitely doesn't put her career in a very good spot.
Yeah, it's kind of a sticky situation in a fight that somebody, you know, a hardcore fan or somebody might look at the records and think, well, Ostovich is 4-4, Paige VanZant's what, 7-4,
yeah,
something like that. I mean, not the greatest of records. It's a half decent fight though, in this division, and it's going to be interesting to see how this one goes because both women have shown flashes of brilliance in certain fights, and I know that's kind of a cliche thing to say, but every now and again you'll see Rachel Ostovich here and there throw a good takedown. You'll see her throw a good punch on the feet. She'll switch stances. Paige VanZant, my God, I mean, the switch
kick. Beth Rollins jumping switch kick was pretty crazy.
That was pretty crazy.
I would say, and I know Paige is moving up, she's kind of a natural strawweight, but she's one of those fighters who, and I think cutting weight is never the right answer, but for some people, moving down a weight definitely has benefits. It makes you, it means that you have to be more disciplined, you kind of have to do everything exactly by the book. So I don't know if Paige VanZant moving up to 125 is the best thing for a career. I understand cutting weight probably sucks. I've never had to do it myself, thank God. But I just don't know if that's the right answer for her career, because Rachel's definitely the bigger girl out of the two in this fight. So wrestling-wise, Rachel will probably have the advantage. But let's be honest, Paige is better in every aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I would hazard to say, I mean, Ostovich probably going to have the advantage with the wrestling.
But jiu-jitsu-wise, you'd go Paige.
Yeah, I'd go Paige. I mean, I'm going to take VanZant in this fight. She's a minus 155, minus 160 favorite. That's half decent if you want to take her there. But again, if Ostovich is going to win, she's got to get hit the takedowns, be consistent with the takedowns, and try and land some ground and pound. We've seen her do it in the past before, and she has fought high-level competition, too. I mean, she came up on the Ultimate Fighter Season 27, the introduction of the flyweight division. Of course, you had Montano, you had Modafferi, but there was some good talent. And unlike the recent featherweight division, where it just kind of imploded and everybody's a bantamweight,
there's more than one fighter in this division.
A lot of the talent stuck around from flyweight, and they're A, marketable, and B, they have half-decent fights, too.
Exactly. The only problem with that division is who's going to fight the champ next, because you win two fights, you're pretty much in there with a title shot. So that's why they're kind of looking outside the division to have challengers. But no, the division, at least, it's on the right track. I think that's the right way to put it.
Exactly. And in our next fight, we've got a guy that's challenged for the title at one point. We've got a guy with heavy, heavy hands in Dustin Ortiz. So you got Ortiz taking on Joseph Benavidez. Now, Benavidez is, I wouldn't say a heavy favorite.
2-1.
But he's a favorite. I mean, yeah, minus 225 around there. Ortiz plus 190. I mean, they vary. They always do. But it's going to be an interesting fight. I mean,
be a good fight.
Joseph Benavidez is a guy, again, kind of wishy-washy in my mind's eye recently. I mean, we've seen him have such success, but injuries really kind of derailed him. He did look good in his last fight. Dustin Ortiz is a guy that has heavy effing hands. Very heavy hands for a lower weight class. You don't see it as much. I liken him to a guy, and I know they were both on the same card, but a guy like Rob Font, UFC 220. I mean, a guy with really heavy hands.
The difference is, though, Dustin Ortiz doesn't throw combinations.
No, exactly. And he does tend to move well, but you're right, doesn't throw a whole hell of a lot of combinations.
It'll be like one punch. He's very wrestling heavy, too, so it'll be like one power shot. If he misses, go for the double A.
And
power shot, miss, go for the double A.
It's a good move. If you're a guy like that and you start introducing, and I've talked about it a lot, but you're a guy that starts to do the old grab for the ceiling, introduce some of those fakes.
Like you're going
to
see in the main event, TJ Dillashaw, he'll stand southpaw, and with his right hand, he like kind of moves it up and down, like kind of gets people distracted, and then he throws. It's really awkward. Dustin Ortiz definitely doesn't do it to that level.
No.
He's more like, you know, level change more than anything. It's less of a distraction. It's more of, I'm going to go to the head and then shoot. I'm going to go to the head and then shoot.
The question in this fight, though, is what's next for the winner? What happens to either of these guys?
I think it really depends on who wins the main event. Because let's say TJ Dillashaw goes out there and in a minute switch kicks Henry Cejudo in the head, ground and pounds him. He wins. It's not like he's staying at 125.
Bye-bye, flyweight.
I don't think the flyweight division lasts past a year anyways. I think that if Cejudo wins, it just kind of prolongs the inevitable. I think no matter what, they're probably going to get rid of the division here soon.
Which is kind of a shame, and it's interesting because I had read somewhere here recently, you know, it was confirmed behind closed doors, wink, wink, that this is going to be the last flyweight fight for good. But if I'm not mistaken, Kai Kara France has a fight coming up soon. There's already some other 125 fights. I think it's silly to get rid of the division. I mean, I understand, and a lot of people smarter than I have said, well, you know, if you saw a guy that was 125 pounds walking down the street, I could kick his ass.
No, you couldn't. TJ Dillashaw would kick my head off my shoulders.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are world-class athletes. It's a lot of fun to watch these fights because they're typically so quick. And maybe there's not, you know, punching power where there's finishing ability, but you land a good combination, you land something neat. Plus what Demetrius Johnson was able to do. I mean, it's definitely a marketable division, but without Demetrius Johnson, it's tough.
Exactly. There's no stars left in the division, and any of them that had any hype behind them have been cut since Demetrius left. So they really have kind of, they've drained the division of most of its talent. And like you said, there's definitely not the one punch. It just seems to me, and maybe I'm off on this, it seems like the difference between 125 and 135, it's only 10 pounds. But the style is so much different. Kind of as you move up the rankings, it seems like there's less kicks, less cardio, and just more power. That's just kind of how it seems.
And we saw that, too, with Sergio Pettis' last fight as well. I mean, he had a really tough transition up to 135. But moving forward, we've got a fighter who's, you know,
oh, I
gone
think
between
Benavidez wins that fight.
You're taking Benavidez. I'm actually I'm taking Ortiz. I think Ortiz is going to be able to get it done, and that's a half decent pick if you're going to be picking a dog in the fight there. But we're talking about changing in weight classes. You got Yancy Medeiros, a guy who's fought at 170, a guy who's fought at 155, taking on Gregor Gillespie, who, what's his nickname? The Gift?
Yeah, it's a bad name.
It's not. I know
Gregor,
he's a fisherman.
I like you. I don't know why I'm asking.
Go with the fisherman. But this is a weird fight because
Gregor the Seaman Gillespie.
Gregor's a huge favorite. He's over a -500 on certain sites.
It's just weird.
Yancy Medeiros, and I said it on Saturday, his toughest test so far. If Gillespie's going to be able to get the win, how does he have to do it?
Really wrestling heavy. He can't stand. He can stand with Yancy. Yancy's a really good striker, but he doesn't have crazy power or anything. If Yancy's going to win, I think he needs a stoppage. I think he's going to have to go out there and just land something big and try to at least get Gillespie's respect early to kind of discourage him from going for the takedown constantly. Because if anything we know from Gillespie, he has really good hands. He has power punches. Doesn't throw many kicks, though. He has to get in close. And Yancy was talking about it. I was watching an interview with him today, too. He trains with the best fighter in the world, arguably. Like, one of the pound-for-pound top five guys in the world every single day. And we haven't seen him in a year. So he's probably... He's definitely made improvements since the last time we've seen him. It just kind of depends on, has he made enough improvements to beat a guy like Gregor Gillespie?
And the weird thing about it, too, so Gillespie's a guy that's from the upper part of New York. He fought on that Utica card. It was a big deal. He was kind of almost a hometown guy there. And now he's going to be fighting in Brooklyn. So he's still going to have a bit of a hometown feel with the New York stuff. Yancy Medeiros, proud Hawaiian. As long as Yancy Medeiros doesn't milk the intro and want to high five and hug everybody, and he's focused on the damn fight, I think he's going to be able to do well. If he can throw output, which we know he can, if he can keep that up for three rounds, he might be able to eke out a decision.
He's a tough son of a bitch, too.
But as far as the odds are concerned, Gillespie, huge favorite. His wrestling's, you know, bar down, some of the best in the lightweight division, and great wrestlers in the lightweight division. I've got Gillespie in this one.
I do, too. I think Gillespie's going to win. I wouldn't bet on this fight, though. I think Gillespie's too big of a favorite, and Yancy's too dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally not worth it. And before we get into our co-main and our main event, a reminder that the show is brought to you by Spretzebox. Let's see what they have to offer.
Today's episode is brought to you by Spretzebox. Head on over to the website, spretzebox.com. All you have to do, click to get started. You can either order one of their boxes that has over $100 in value, or maybe you're interested in a single item, like these great socks. So click on them, add them to your cart, head on over to the checkout, and then all you have to do is enter in the promo code FNP as follows here. You'll save 10% off your first box or your complete first order. That's spretzebox.com.
All right, and I like to stay fresh at the shows, and we're going to be at NEF 37 coming at you from Bangor, Maine, February 1st. So I'll be there if you want to hang out, want to say hi. I'm going to be there next to the cage covering the event. We had some different interviews last week with Cam Arnold, Zach Richard, and Bill Jones. All three of those guys on that card. One is your amateur bantamweight champ, one competing for the amateur featherweight title, and Bill Jones for the pro featherweight title. So some neat stuff there, and really looking forward to that, and also really looking forward to the co-main and the main event.
Well,
now,
not so much the co-main.
My question is, it's a stupid question.
I don't want to feed a fed horse, but...
This is the co-main event because Greg Hardy was a half-decent star in the NFL. I believe he was a Pro Bowler at one point for the Carolina Panthers. He had domestic violence issues when he was in the NFL. The Panthers got rid of him. The Cowboys picked him up. And then, basically, the Cowboys banished him. And if a team like the Cowboys, who will pick up,
well,
you know...
What is a league like the NFL?
Thugs.
Yeah.
If they'll pick up guys like that and they get rid of him, you know that something's up. So, Greg Hardy getting a second chance. And listen,
I
understand it.
First round knock, yeah.
People deserve second chances. I get it. But Greg Hardy was a guy that... showed not a lot of remorse in a league where it matters a lot. If you show a lot of remorse, you can get second chances in the NFL, and he kind of did. But you know, it's a tough one. It's a sticky one. I know for the fans paying attention at home, you can drop a comment if you want on this one. But it's, you know, again, it and you joke feeding a fed horse. It's been talked about. There's no sense of us talking about it much further. But I know Alan Crowder wants this win. He's got a lot more experience. He's not going to get it.
But even forget about, like, both guys pass. Let's just say Fighter 1's fighting Fighter 2. If you're 3-0 and you fought three scrubs, should he really be on the first ESPN card in the co-main event?
No, I mean, it's more or less, you know, feeding off of the experience from NFL. You're going to try and entice people to buy ESPN Plus because they're going to have... There's that name value, that built-in name value, whether it's good or bad. It's name recognition, right?
The first guy with any wrestling that's going to be... Like, a bunch of people think he's this crazy athlete who's going to beat everybody. That's not true at all. If you start MMA in your 30s, unless you're CM Punk, you're probably not going to do great things.
And the thing is, like, with Greg Hardy, so he's what? 3-0 as an amateur, 4-0 as an amateur. 3-0, I believe. All three of them first-round finishes. As a pro, all three of them first-round finishes.
All under a minute.
The smart thing that the UFC did was not sign him right away and have him fight in the UFC. They gave him a developmental deal. He fought on Contender Series, what, twice?
Yeah.
And then he fought one more fight, and now he's here. He's taking on Alan Crowder, a guy who's 9-3, who has the experience. I believe he might be the taller guy. It's going to be close, but Greg Hardy, yeah, it's going to be a first-round finish.
He's going to knock him out in the first. I'm going to be real sad because I'm not a big Greg Hardy fan.
No. But
the next fight... is real cool.
So let's get into our main event. Drum roll: Henry Cejudo, TJ Dillashaw. And it's interesting because TJ Dillashaw not doing this weight cut alone. His teammate, Spaniard Juan Archuleta, also moving down. So he's moving from 145 to 135, taking on Ricky Bandejas at Bellator 214 next weekend. Dillashaw, we saw that picture, what, 2-3 weeks ago of a drained Dillashaw. I think he was handing out a prize or whatever.
He looked like they took all the blood out of his body.
And one of the first things that you can lose is the weight in your face if you're going to start cutting weight like that.
A lot of water in them cheeks.
Exactly. So TJ Dillashaw, it's been interesting seeing him over the past couple weeks. You know, there's been pictures of Cejudo coming out. He looks like the Tasmanian devil. I mean, those pictures could have came out 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I saw a lot of people think that they were Photoshopped because one arm is way bigger than the other, which, listen, whatever he does in his own time is up to him. I'm just saying, maybe they're not completely accurate, and maybe his camp's just putting stuff out there. Maybe that's a little tinfoil hat-y for you guys, but still, TJ's better at everything. It just kind of depends on the weight cut.
TJ, and we've talked about it here, if you want to head on over to the Toctagon, Ty O'Keefe and I did a good preview of the event, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, TJ Dillashaw, arguably the best MMA-style wrestling that you're going to find. Cejudo, Olympic caliber, gold medalist in Beijing. But yeah, I mean, Dillashaw punches harder, hits better, kicks, throws better combos.
Better footwork, more dynamic.
And I mean, jiu-jitsu. The fact that he trains with guys like Dwayne Ludwig, everybody at the training lab, having Juan Archuleta, who's going to be taking on, finally, a really tough test in Bandejas.
Cub Swanson
as well.
Aaron Pico.
It's all smart, sports science that they employ, heart rate monitors. And this weight cut's gone great. I think you had said, and he might have mentioned it today at the press conference, just weighs a little bit over 125. I know a guy like Donald Cerrone, I believe he weighed quite a bit over 155.
He weighs 164, which isn't that crazy.
Not too bad, but Dillashaw is right on the cusp. And so that weight cut's not going to be an issue. Cejudo, he's going to make weight as well. It's a neat fight because Cejudo, a plus 175 in this one. Dillashaw, a relatively heavy favorite, almost 2-1. I'd like to hear what you have to say first before we make our pitch.
And weight cut-wise, it's not like just TJ has a hard weight cut 125. Yeah. Henry Cejudo has always struggled to make 125.
And it's weird because as an Olympic wrestler, I believe he was 121 or 122 for as far as pounds. I know it's normally kilograms. Exactly, but he was down below 125, so it's been interesting to see kind of the progression of his body moving into MMA, and you definitely have to train different, cross-train. It's totally different.
Just don't focus so heavy on TJ's weight cut, because Henry's definitely not having an easy one either.
100%. I think that makes a lot of sense. So in this main event, I'm going to be taking TJ Dillashaw. I mean, I said it in both Garbrandt fights. I don't think he was a heavy favorite, if a favorite.
He was an underdog in the first, favorite in the second.
Exactly. And been taking Dillashaw. I mean, you look at the losses that he had. What, the last two were split decisions?
He lost to Dominic Cruz, which was a close fight. A lot of people thought TJ won. Yeah. I did think Cruz won. And then he lost to Rafael Assunção in Brazil, split decision.
And Dodson was the only other one. And that was a finish eons ago. So don't even look at that. Cejudo had, Demetrius Johnson. I believe that was the most recent one.
No, then he lost right after that.
In a fight
I thought he won.
Back to back. And he's won, what, 4 in a row?
Yeah, he won three, I think, to get the title shot, and then he won.
Yeah, so 4 fights in a row. It's going to be,
it'll be a phenomenal fight, I think.
You talk about fight of the night. That's a fight of the night. Even if it finishes in the first round, it's going to be a great fight. These are two of the best fighters, and it's a damn shame that we have all these stupid champ fights all the time now, but this is a great fight.
Exactly. The only other champ fight I want to see is Max Holloway, Khabib, and that's it. But I would wait, and I know we bring up the odds and kind of betting a little bit. I would not put money on this fight until the official weigh-in. So they do, or not the ceremonial ones, I guess, in the evening. So they're going to do the official ones. Both guys will probably make weight, but then wait to see the ceremonial ones later on to see how both guys have rehydrated. Because let's say in the morning, TJ looks like death, but then by the evening, he looks fine. Then maybe this weight cut wasn't that bad of an idea or that big of a deal. So it's definitely not a bad idea to put money on that fight. Unlike the Gillespie-Yancey, I would completely avoid that. But at least kind of wait a little bit.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. And Saturday night, we're going to be live on Sports Booth TV. You can see it over there on the right-hand corner of the screen. I'll have a link below in the description. It's just sportsbooth.tv. You can find us there. It's going to be real-time interaction, so it's going to be a similar setup to this. We're going to have the chat available as well like we typically do. We're going to have our timer. You can also find on that site, not totally similar to the UFC card. I guess it's over there. But they do have a card, pictures of the fighters. You can get your information as we have it as well. We're also going to have the ticker and all sorts of fun stuff that we do during the fight companion. So make sure you tune in for that. I'll switch it over to this as we close this out. You can find me again, Craig Allen FNP on Twitter and Instagram. Matt at Matt Allen FNP on Twitter. Like I said, we're going to be live on Saturday. Appreciate the interviews with Adrian and Anthony. Again, special thanks to Matt for setting that up. Matt Dodge, that is. And be sure to subscribe here on YouTube, also on iTunes, Stitcher for the audio podcast, but on YouTube specifically, so you'll know that when we go live for UFC on ESPN Plus.
And like you mentioned before, really feel free to send us your questions. I know I can speak for myself. That's one of my favorite parts is interacting with you guys. Hanging out with him is okay and watching the fights, but we both really enjoy interacting with you guys. So any questions that you have during the fight, in between, anything like that, for sure ask it.
Very best. So hopefully you can join us on Saturday. We'll be back here live on YouTube. And if you're listening to the podcast, be sure to subscribe and keep following along. We're going to have some great interviews next week with some top-tier UFC talent.